This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is WPR News. You know, when I sent an email to our next guest asking him to be on the show, I didn't hear back right away. And when he did reply, he told me he was, quote, having fun crossing roses like mad with different disease-resistant genes. And that, friends, is what we are going to be talking about today. We're happy to have David Zlesak with us again. David is a professor of horticulture in the Plant and Earth Science Department at UW River Falls. He's a nationally recognized rose breeder known for varieties like the Compact Zone 4 Hardy Pretty Polly series and the Climbing Above and Beyond Rose. And we'll find out more about what he's working on, answer your rose questions, of course. So give us a call, 800-642-1234, and send an email to talk at WPR.org. David, it's so good to see you again.
Oh, great to be with you, Jill. Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. I thought it was so funny when you sent that email back to me. I'm like, this is a guy who is just in his element.
It's a great time of year, yeah, the growing season for all of us gardeners to be out and about and away from the computer.
Oh, for sure. I tell you, I just love being out there picking off Japanese beetles off of my plants. I can't tell you. So much
There's
fun.
A lot.
Yeah. So tell us, what are you doing now, current research? What's going on out there?
Yeah, so I love doing whatever I can with roses, of course, and over the years, working with colleagues, being able to identify different black spot resistance genes. Black spot is the major fungal disease that roses get, and defoliate them in our gardens. Through the work of William Rattler out of the Milwaukee area and many others over the last few decades, we've been able to elevate black spot resistance so much that roses have become staples for the low maintenance garden. And from the work of Will and others and me tinkering with wild species too, been able to identify where some of these recent genes are coming from, which roses, which backgrounds. Ultimately, the goal is to leverage that information to come up with quick little PCR tests, leveraging their DNA, so we could quickly tell which seedlings inherited which genes, and then find those that inherit a combination of them to make them even more resistant.
Yeah, and I listened. Now, you said wild roses, too. Now, are wild roses, they're resistant to these diseases. Is that right, in most cases?
Yeah, that's a great point and great question. So many of them do have resistance genes that confer resistance to a subset of the fungi. And I just actually got some cuttings of a wild species from the Brooklyn Botanical Garden yesterday for the research. I don't want to divulge too much yet because the papers aren't out, but some of our North American wild rose species are sources of a couple of these genes that we've been studying. So that's really fun. So there's a lot of background work to, you know, pull together bits and pieces to help breeders to just help our landscape plants just continue to be with us in the future and have the traits that gardeners need.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that you're mentioning this because I've just noticed in the last 10 years or so that it used to be it's like, oh, you're growing roses. Oh, gosh, they're so hard. And oh, my gosh, you must be really dedicated. But it seems like more and more people are putting roses in their garden and I'm seeing them all over. And a lot of that has to do with some people from Wisconsin, right? Tell us a little bit about the history of roses in Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's a rich legacy of rose breeding and impacts on roses, not only in the United States, but the world. So in the 1890s, there were two brothers, the Berner brothers, that were born in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. And Gene Berner became the rose breeder at Jackson and Perkins. They were the largest U.S. and for a while world rose nursery, and he led their breeding program through the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and came up with the Floribunda roses. He moved to New York. That's where Jackson and Perkins was headquartered. And then his brother Alfred went to school for landscape architecture, and it's Alfred that the Berner Botanical Gardens is named after. He designed it about a century ago. And Gene would send his advanced rose selections to Alfred, and they'd test them there at Berner. And so growing up in Wisconsin, Jean recognized just how important it is to have winter hardiness, or try to work towards elevating winter hardiness, so people in his home state could be able to grow them. So that's, you know, decades ago, that connection with Wisconsin. But then also William Rattler, he's retired. He was the director of Berner Botanical Gardens through the 70s and 80s. And he loved roses too. And he recognized that that people wanted to grow roses that took less maintenance, that were more disease resistant, because as he recognized, many of his friends and mentors, as they were aging, they weren't growing roses as much because of, just like you said, they have that reputation of being hard to grow. So for decades, he'd grow the above average roses at home that he learned about by growing them in the garden, and then intermating them and elevating black spot resistance just in his home yard for decades. And he came up with the Knockout Rose, which came out in 2000. And there's a whole series, and it revolutionized our expectation for what disease-resistant roses could look like. And Will was my rose breeding mentor as a kid. And he's a dear friend, and he shares a lot of his proprietary parental roses so we could study the resistance genes.
How fortunate for you.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. And then another dear friend in Wisconsin, Julie Overham, she's in northern Wisconsin, northwestern Wisconsin, Barnes, Wisconsin. She's been breeding roses for over 30 years. And her rose, Cherry Frost, which is a beautiful chest-high, a little bit larger shrub rose. You could grow it as a small climber, beautiful red rose, lots of abundant blooms. That rose of hers is sold widely throughout Wisconsin and the nation, even internationally now, at box stores and also independent garden centers. It's a beautiful rose.
Isn't that crazy how it goes from just one little thing and all of a sudden, boom, it's all over the place? Does that mean that growers can make some money off of that? I mean, what is there a market? I mean, can you get rich growing a rose?
That's a really great question. Will Rattler's done well because of the Knockouts, because they're so universally, you know, amazing and groundbreaking. And he has the brand new Triple Knockout that's coming on the market next year. I'm fortunate to have a plant a year ahead of time. It's more double. It's full. It's red. It has fragrance. It's really beautiful. So he's continuing to advance things. So I lose money on my roses just because I buy multons of mulch at home and I just keep buying more roses for research, but that's okay. I breed nine bark too, and the profits from the nine bark pay for the roses.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Nine bark too. I mean, we're kind of getting off topic, but nine barks have been just amazing lately too. How many people have nine barks these days too?
It's a U.S. native and even a Wisconsin native, so it's wonderful to see our native shrubs be worked with and come into the limelight.
For sure. Now, are you working on a specific one yourself, or are you just working on some specific ones, or a bunch of them, I should say?
For nine bark?
No, for your roses. I'm sorry. We'll get back on
roses.
Topic.
Yeah. At home, I just love the diversity. So I have little flowered ones, large climbers, species hybrids, stuff that'll, you know, never make it to market because the market can only, you know, handle and market so many to the public. But the diversity is so fun. I appreciate them all different colors, single to very double blooms. So my goal especially is to cross different ones that I know have different black spot resistance genes, so we could demonstrate that you can combine them. So a lot of what I do is to prepare populations of seedlings that would be helpful to do these research experiments that we could publish on, and I enjoy their beauty, of course, along the way, and invite garden clubs to come out and visit for tours.
Oh, excellent. Can a single person come out and get a tour, or is it got to be a group?
Yeah. Yeah, just send me an email.
Okay. I'll have to keep that in mind if I'm ever in the area. That would be fun, actually. So right now we have, we're going to take a little bit of a break in just a second, but for news, and then we're going to be coming back, but we're going to be talking about caring for roses because has it been kind of a hard summer for roses?
Yeah, especially with the heat lately and in parts of Wisconsin, it was dry for spells here in the spring. Mm-hmm. So the smoke too, I think the smoke affects people more than the roses, but
probably
it's hard for everybody.
Yeah, but the smoke makes us not want to go outside. So we're not caring for them as much as we probably should.
Yeah, but they're resilient. They have a will to live, many of them, most of them, and just like our other garden plants. So we'll help them through.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we'll get back and talk about that in a little bit. But like I said, we're going to be taking a quick break. Right now, we're talking about roses. So if you've got rose questions, how are your roses doing? We'd really like to help you out with them. Our number, of course, 800-642-1234. And you can always send an email. That's talk@wpr.org. And we are talking with David Zlisak. He is a professor of horticulture in the Plant and Earth Science Department of UW River Falls, and he's a nationally recognized rose breeder. So stay with us, and like I said, we'll be back in just a bit. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks so much for spending some of your time with us today. We're talking about roses. Who doesn't love a beautiful rose? And we're so happy to have a rose expert with us. David Zlisak is here, and he is a professor of horticulture in the Plant and Earth Science Department at UW River Falls. If you have a question about roses, please give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's start with an email right away, David. Elka in Empire, Michigan called but couldn't stay with us. She says a rose's fragrance is the most important and rewarding part of growing roses to her. Do you have any recommendations for how to improve fragrance in your roses?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Fragrance is kind of fleeting because depending on the time of day and the temperature, humidity. So earlier in the day, before the heat evaporates those essential oils, you know, we could typically perceive fragrance even better. This is what I do. If my roses are well watered, you know, that helps them be turgid, and I think that helps contribute to not only overall health, but ability then to make the fragrance compounds. And then when I go up to a rose, a double one, I love to blow into it to separate the petals in the middle a little bit and release some of that fragrance, and then just stick my nose right in there. So that helps me enjoy the roses that I know that are fragrant, that I walk up to and just anticipate that experience. Otherwise, you know, sometimes fragrance is perceived differently by different people, and some of the descriptions say something's highly fragrant, but we might not agree. So going to public gardens, going to the local garden center and seeing what's in bloom and experiencing those roses ourselves is a wonderful way to find those that are particularly fragrant that we'd love.
There's nothing more disappointing than finding a beautiful rose and then going up to smell it and there's no scent.
Yeah, it takes.
It's just not the same. So
there's over 30 what are called volatile. So volatile just means that they evaporate, that they volatilize, and compounds. And so a rose might not be fragrant to us, but insects could perceive some of those fragrances that we can't. So that's interesting.
And that is the point, right? The fragrance is there for the insects to come.
That's true. We enjoy it too. But...
We do. Thank you, Elka. I appreciate that. Let's go to the phones. We've got Rob in Port Edwards. Go right ahead, Rob.
Hi, thank you for your show. And I have two quick questions. When I lived in Fall River, Columbia County, I lived in an upside down gravel pit. The soil was just gravel. And I amended the soil somewhat. And I planted a couple of shrub roses that were a simplex yellow rose. And they shot to the moon. Honest to Pete, I had to trim them back when they got to be 10 feet tall. They're unbelievable. Here in Port Edwards, which is 75 miles northwest, right off the Wisconsin River, the soil actually is somewhat better. And I have amended the soil, and I tried two different times with what I thought was a very similar bush. It's from a local excellent greenhouse that has a national brand of plant that I purchased and did all the things that I did before. And they didn't make it in either case more than a year. So I guess the questions are, what could I possibly be doing wrong? This is sandy soil, but I did amend the soil. And secondly, is there a website, a place where I can look up indigenous wildflowers, you know, simplex flowers, simplex roses that I could plant that maybe you'd have a better shot around here?
Those are great questions. I grew up in West Bend, just a little bit away from you there in Port. Are you Port Washington?
Port Edwards.
Port Edwards. Okay, a little different answer. So one of the challenges for us here in the north is that the roses that are available to go through the supply chain and get through our garden centers are grown and distributed nationally. So many of them might not be the most adapted for especially our winters to make it through. So maybe you didn't do anything wrong. So if it lived a year, at least they lived during the growing season. And it sounds like maybe winter is what did them in. So one thing that might be a good resource is going to local regional botanical gardens, seeing what's doing well for them. So if you want I assume by simplex, you mean a five petaled rose. If you want a good yellow one that blooms in the spring, they don't repeat bloom aggressively or maybe at all, but they're solid hardy roses, Rosa hugonus, known as the Father Hugo rose, Rosa primula as well. They're single, they're yellow, they're very hardy. Also, Harrison's Yellow, which has more petals, is also a favorite that's solidly hardy. Golden Wings is a repeat blooming older rose from the 1950s, shrub rose that is single and yellow. So we might need to take a little step back in time and order from some mail order nurseries that have some of our regionally adapted roses that might not be in the mainstream supply chains. But sometimes some really good hardy roses do come through our local independent garden centers, especially, and once in a while through our box stores too. So really good variety selection is important. I'd encourage you to check out trustedroses.com. That's the website of the American Rose Trials for Sustainability, and I'm the current president. We trial roses across the country and give awards by regions. So you could look at the map, click on our region, and see the whole list of roses that have gone through the trials. Green Bay Botanical Garden and Berner Botanical Garden are our regional trial sites, so they have to survive the winter, at least be crown hardy, come back strong, perform well. So that would be a good place to look for some of the more adapted roses for our region.
And as far as an actual native rose, he was asking about any suggestions for that?
Yeah, great question. So our North American native roses and native to Wisconsin, they're all pink. Once in a while, we could find one that's white. And there's a number of them. They bloom for a limited time in the spring. Rosa blanda, Rosa woodsii, Rosa sativa, barely makes it into Wisconsin, Rosa arkansana. So all these five-petaled, mainly pink roses are just wonderful. And they're typically, at least Rosa blanda, lives on woodland edges, so they're somewhat shade tolerant and might look a little wispy. Rosa arkansana is native to more open, sunny prairie areas. I have some in my garden and some repeat bloom a little bit. And those are particularly nice if you have an open, sunny area. They might get a little aggressive and they'll sucker, send out underground shoots just like some lilacs do. So wild roses are just great. And there's early generation wild roses that are crosses with our native roses, with cultivated roses that are really beautiful too. Thérèse Bounet is a beautiful one from the 1950s, still available today. I haven't seen them in box stores this spring. Solidly hardy because of our native Rosa blanda. So I try a Thérèse Bounet. You'd probably find that pretty readily. Solidly hardy, double fragrant, little bit of repeat bloom.
I have noticed that our native roses really do have a beautiful scent.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know my grandmother's church had them planted all the way around, who knows how long ago, but when they were in bloom, you could smell them blocks away. So, yeah, good luck Amazing. With that, Rob. Good luck with that. Next up from Superior, we have Mel. Go right ahead.
Yeah, my favorite is the moss rose, and I'd like to know a little history on it and why mine are, the last couple of years, are only getting about 3 inches tall when before they used to get like 6-7 inches tall.
Okay. There are two groups of plants known as moss roses. There's portulaca, which is like a little succulent that's short like that. And then there's also the moss roses that are roses that have extra little fuzz and fragrance glands on the flower buds. So I'm not sure what you're talking about inches. I'd assume it's the portulaca, those beautiful annuals that come in bright colors and can take the heat and drought.
What do the leaves look like, Mel?
They look like rice, cooked rice.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's what he's talking about. So not
those are beautiful.
Yeah, they're beautiful, but not what you study, right, David?
I enjoy having some in my garden too.
Yeah.
And it's sounds like yours are receding a little bit, which is wonderful.
So Mel, that's a little bit different, but any suggestions as to why they're smaller than they used to be, David? Any idea?
That's a good question. I wonder just because of the season. I'm not sure what Superior was like this year, but in Western Wisconsin, we had a dry spell before the rains came, and things were extra slow and more compact than usual. So even though they're pretty drought tolerant, maybe that slowed them down a little bit.
Okay, that could be the case. Be patient, Mel. See what happens next year. So Hal emailed has breeding eliminated much of the wonderful smell of roses? Interesting to hear that the new triple knockout rose coming out has a great smell. And he believes damask roses are used for their herbal benefits. Can you get them locally? And are there any particulars that you need to know in regard to raising them?
Oh, damask roses are amazing and a rich part of history. So from the Damascus area of Syria in hundreds of years ago, 1400s, 1500s, Damascus was a center of trade, the Silk Road, east to west, north to south even. And DNA fingerprinting tells us, we've learned that it's a three species hybrid, the damask roses, mm-hmm. Rosa gallica from Europe, Rosa fachinkoana from further north there in Asia, and Rosa machata, the musk rose, from further east in Asia. And so these very fragrant roses have been a staple for the rose oil production in Bulgaria and Turkey for centuries. So some of the the original Damask roses, we could buy some of them. There's a variety called Cosm Leek that is used for the oil industry. It's a little marginal for hardiness in our region. They bloom just in the spring, and we need that wood to overwinter. I'd suggest the autumn damask. So it's a mutation that has a little bit of fall rebloom. And so that'll give us that traditional damask rose. They've been in the background through breeding of many classes of roses over the years, the Portlands and other roses down to some of our modern roses. So their genetics are hidden in our modern roses to some extent. And with fragrance, you know, being so many different compounds, when we cross different parents, we reshuffle and often goof stuff up. And fragrance just kind of pops out now and then in different seedlings. And so I think with the priority of fragrance, we have disease-resistant roses now, that as we sift through our seedlings, we should hopefully find enough that are disease-resistant, and then among them, hopefully find more that are fragrant to bring to the market.
Okay, thank you very much for that email. Got another one here from Jeannie. She has a small suburban yard, which is partial shade under oaks, and she's been converting it to mostly native for birds and pollinators. Last year, she lost a dwarf cherry tree near the street. And could you recommend a rose climber to grow on the dead trunk in partial sun? Also, the best native rose as a shrub.
Oh, for a climber, we need really solidly cane hardy stems. So right away in the spring, we'll be able to get those blooms up tall on the plant. So there are a number of options depending upon what colors and features that you're most interested in. We could look to some of the older introductions from Agriculture Canada, some of the climbers that have been staples for a long time. I'd recommend John Davis. It's a real double soft pink one that we could still find at some of our local garden centers. It repeats bloom a little bit better than some of the others. William Baffin and John Cabot are beautiful too. They're larger. They tend to get a little more disease over the years here than maybe we'd like. So John Davis would be really good. There are a number of really good ones. So let's see, High Wire Flyer is from Will Rattler out of Milwaukee, and that one has extra cane hardiness, a lot of vigor, beautiful, double, rich, glowing magenta pink blooms. We could find that pretty readily. So High Wire Flyer is amazing. There's a number of older ones that bloom just in the spring that are incredible. Polsjärnen, which means pole star, it's from Finland, 1937. I love mine. It's about 15 feet tall here in River Falls. I love it. So for wild roses, it depends the size of plant that you're interested in. So maybe with your partial shade, you might want to go for Rosa Blanda or some of the Blanda hybrids. Lillian Gibson is a Rosa Blanda hybrid from Niels Hansen. He was in South Dakota and bred it about a century ago. He used Rosa Blanda in his breeding, and we could still find Lillian Gibson through some mail order catalogs, just a mountain of beautiful double soft pink blooms in the spring. So that'll add a little more modern feel than if you would get straight Rosa Blanda, even though the straight species are wonderful and we appreciate them too.
Wonderful. Thank you for that question. That's a good one, Jean. So we were going to talk. Well, first of all, if you've got a question, we do have a little time left. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. Our guest is David Slezak. He's a professor of horticulture in the Plant and Earth Science Department at UW River Falls. And as you could tell by his answers, he is a font of information on roses. I can't believe you remember all these numbers and names and years in particularly. It's amazing, David. But we wanted to talk a little bit about summer care tips for roses. So let's get into that real quick. So sunlight you wanted to talk about. Let's start there.
Yeah. So if you have a rose that's slowly maybe declining a little bit because a tree is growing over it and it's becoming shadier and shadier in its spot, take note of that. And so at the right time of year, maybe you'll decide to prune back the tree a little bit, or move the rose. So 6 or more hours a day tends to give us roses that are pretty robust, and some could tolerate a little more shade. They might not be quite as full or bloom as much. So take note of changing amounts of sunlight and watering, just like all of our garden plants. If we have a dry spell, try to aim for about 1 inch of irrigation a week from precipitation, and what we need to supplement. I've been moving the sprinklers around the yard here this week quite a bit with the heat, and it's dry at the moment. So manage water and plants respond well. And then look for nutritional deficiencies, just like for any landscape plant. If there's interesting, you know, changes in terms of yellow new growth or veins are off color, this or that, it could be symptoms of micronutrient deficiencies. And for nutrition for roses, as well as other perennial plants in our garden, be it woody or herbaceous, what we're going to want to cut back or stop here later in the summer, so things could harden off well for winter. Because as we push things strong into the fall, they might not harden off, even though they otherwise might be very hardy. So depending upon the kind of fertilizer you might be using, there's different time points to cut back. So if you're using granular fertilizer, if it's quick release that lasts for a few weeks, I'd stop in early August. So the end of August, September, things could slow down. If you're using water-soluble fertilizer that gives a quick rush, which is wonderful, and you're doing it every couple weeks, that's great. You can maybe go a little bit later into the middle of August. I tend to like to be lean a little bit on my roses and make sure that they harden off well for winter. So fertilization, and then also scouting. So having walks through the garden, seeing what diseases, insects there may be, and if you're getting too much of something, think about, well, do I want to intervene, and what are my options? What am I comfortable doing?
And if we do, as far as the diseases go, if we've got something with black spot, if we have some leaves where Japanese beetles have skeletonized them out, should we cut those off, or is it best just to leave them? What's the best way to do it?
Yeah, good question. For the Japanese beetles, I tend to just leave them because I think, well, there's still a little bit of green. It could photosynthesize and make some energy to make new leaves, even though it might look a little less than ideal. And another little point about Japanese beetles, I am so excited. I found the winsome fly eggs on beetles in my garden last year and this year. So look on their heads. And if you see little white dots, that's eggs of their natural predator that'll hatch and kill them supposedly within a week. So if you have those, that's great. My numbers have plummeted the last couple of years. So I've been very hesitant to use insecticides because I don't want to hurt the bees and then also the winsome flies. So for black spot, if you have a very susceptible rose, maybe that's the indication to replace it next growing season, or if it's just moderately susceptible, if possible, if you could pull off those leaves to reduce the amount of spores to splash up onto the new leaves, that would help. And there's different kinds or degrees of fungicides that you could use too. You could use more organic things like sulfur. It's not as effective as some of the standard fungicides, but we can look to different things. And just know that the environment plays a big role. So if we have dry conditions and warmth, we'll have less black spot than wet and lots of dew.
Okay. And I think I have time for one more quick question here. Carolyn in Madison called but couldn't stay with us. She has a new shrub rose. She had a new shrub rose get absolutely obliterated by rabbits. Yeah, I know that. Now the bush is growing back shorter and smaller, and she's wondering why.
Oh, yeah. So the rabbits took a lot of its energy, and so the push of new growth and all that energy into the seasons, basically solar panels, the leaves of that plant to generate more energy were removed, and not it just is starting with less energy, it's building. So what I would do is, yeah, just protect it from rabbits. If you could put a physical barrier or spray lots of repellents, if you don't want to have a little fence or cage around it, let it rebuild, and it should hopefully rebuild fully and surpass the size that it was when you planted it.
Those darn rabbits. And one more real quick. Janice emailed, do you know the proper name of a rose developed in Wisconsin called something like Up, Up, and Away? I don't know. Maybe it's yours, Above and Beyond. It's a sort of a climber, robust. She thinks the blooms change color as they mature to be pink and yellow.
Yeah, that sounds like Above and Beyond.
Yeah.
So the buds start out orange, and then they change to apricot, and then they get some pinkish highlights. And so that came on the market in 2015. It was a seedling about 2020. And it has a yellow miniature as a mom. That's not very hardy or healthy, but yellow and repeats bloom. And then the dad is a species hybrid. That's a combination of Rosa virginiana from Eastern Canada and Rosa laxa from Siberia that Niels Hansen from South Dakota brought back in 1897. So all that together made this big, hardy monster.
So, Janice, we have the person who bred it here, right here. And it is called Above and Beyond, and they're still available. So, yeah, that's the one you want to get. And, yeah, David is the person who created that. So good question to end on. And once again, David, thank you for being with us. And we will be doing this again. And anything happening in the rose world, please let me know so we can have you on sooner. Okay?
Thank you so much, Jill.
You're welcome.
Great to be with you and the viewers, the listeners.
You bet. David Slezak is professor of horticulture in the Plant and Earth Science Department at UW River Falls. And as you could tell, he's a nationally recognized rose breeder. He's known for varieties like Pretty Polly and, of course, the one we just talked about, Above and Beyond. Stay with us. Paul Segan is going to be with us in a little bit and talk about trees.